I'm going to take Chelsea's comments about my sermon length as encouragement. Thank you, Chelsea. I realized last week that you guys now have a built-in timer for my sermon, also with our Advent candles, and apparently last week it did get about halfway down, and some of you were worried about what might happen if I preached too long, so we're going to try to keep that to a minimum. I hope you've been watching some football recently. One of the things that you got to know about football is that at halftime, the game's not over, right? When the third quarter comes around, anything could happen. And that is sort of where we are in the book of Ruth. So grab a Bible and open up to the book of Ruth in the Old Testament. The story of Ruth, if you haven't been tracking with us, we'll kind of catch you up a little bit, but it's divided into four chapters, like four quarters, right? Each of the chapters, though, depicts another act in the drama, so to speak, of God leading his people from a place of famine to a place of fullness. That's where we see this story going. Act one, if you remember, was all about the matriarch of the story, Naomi, and all of her loss that was met with God's love, even when she couldn't see it. When she couldn't make sense of her life, God was still at work. Act two, chapter two, revealed God's favor, his grace on Naomi and her daughter-in-law, Ruth, through a farmer named Boaz. And through Boaz's kindness to Ruth, Naomi began to see how God was truly at work on her behalf, even though she could not originally see it. Now in Act 3, we're going to start reading today. It begins with a cold open. You know, last week we saw Act 2, begin with a narrator sort of introducing this character Boaz and setting the stage for with the curtains to open to Chapter 2. Well, I don't know if you guys are Saturday Night Live fans, but Saturday Night Live has made this this popular, this idea of the cold open, where we really don't get any information about this scene except it just jumps right into the dialogue, okay? So just get ready. This is a cold open into Chapter 3. We're jumping straight in without any introductions or information, but what we're going to find is Naomi the matriarch giving Ruth some instruction. This is Naomi's instruction at the very beginning of chapter 3. Ruth's mother-in-law, Naomi, said to her, "My daughter, shouldn't I find rest for you so that you will be taken care of? Now, isn't Boaz our relative? Haven't you been working with his female servants? This evening, he will be winnowing barley on the threshing floor. Wash, put on perfumed oil, and wear your best clothes. Go down to the threshing floor, but don't let the man know you're there until he's finished eating and drinking. And when he lies down, notice the place where he's lying. Go in and uncover his feet and lie down. Then he will explain to you what you should do." So Ruth said to her, "I will do everything you say." Let's pause right there. Now, if you're wondering why a mother-in-law is sending a daughter-in-law to this man, Boaz, to introduce herself in this way on the winnowing floor, the threshing floor, it is because both of them are widows. And we've seen that in the act as part of the loss of chapter 1, that when Naomi lost her husband, she also then, a few years later, lost both of her sons, who were married to these two Moabite women, Ruth and Orpah. And we're going to see what happens here in just a moment, but Ruth stuck with Naomi, even though she had no reason to. There was no benefit in it for Ruth to stick with Naomi, no guarantees in this life, only an expression of covenant loyalty and love that she had learned from Israel's God, Yahweh. And she gave that as a gift to Naomi. And after all this time, Naomi now is returning the gift to Ruth. I want you to look at chapter 3, verse 1, because a word stands out in this chapter, and we're going to see it at the end of the chapter as well, but the word is the word rest. Naomi says to Ruth, "My daughter, shouldn't I find rest for you so that you'll be taken care of?" Now, your translation might use a different word. It might use the word home. It might use the word abode. Shouldn't I find a house for you? Shouldn't I find security for you? Ruth, you are in a place where you have nothing. It would be great if I could help you find contentment, find satisfaction. because your life has been, all these things have been taken away from you, but yet you've been so faithful. I would love now to see you full. Having been emptied, it's time to move towards fullness. And so Naomi reverses what she says in chapter 1. Do you remember? If you flip back, you can see it in chapter 1, verses 8 and 9, where Naomi says to both Ruth and Orpah, her daughters-in-law, who are both widows as well, each of you, go back to your mother's home. In other words, go back to Moab. May the Lord show kindness to you as you have shown to the dead and to me. May the Lord grant each of you rest in the house of a new husband. And she kissed them and they wept loudly. See, that was Naomi's instruction to Ruth initially in chapter 1 was just go back home, right? Before we travel back to Bethlehem and to the people of Israel, you have a future here. Just leave. But Orpah, while she goes back to her family, Ruth says, no, I'm going to stay with you because your God will be my God, right? Your home will be my home. Your people will be my people. And this, she makes this covenant partnership with Naomi, two widows together in this, and she stays. And so now Naomi reverses. Having seen God at work, Naomi's going through a transformation. And I hope you've seen it the last few weeks, as she saw how God was working even when she wasn't aware in chapter 1. She becomes aware of it in chapter 2. And now, not only does she see herself as a recipient of God's work, she's beginning to see herself again as a participant in God's work. And so Naomi wants to find rest, home, contentment, satisfaction for Ruth. This is a good start. But it points us to a bigger reality. See, had Ruth not found a home, found rest, found contentment, found satisfaction, the home with Naomi wouldn't last. In the culture of Israel at the time, for a widow who is especially a foreigner, if Naomi was to die, then Ruth would be left ultimately with nothing and no hope. And so Naomi's effort here is to introduce her to hope, not just for her, but for her lineage. She recognized that Ruth needed not just a husband, but a redeemer, someone who could restore what her family had lost, someone who was related to their lost husbands, who could redeem not only what they owned in Israel, but also provide a lineage for their family. And this was part of what God had planned all along. In fact, when we talk about God at work, even when we don't understand it and we don't see it, God started this decades, even centuries before. You can go all the way back to Genesis and see the same Hebrew word used for kinsman redeemer in Ruth. The Hebrew words goel. You can also go to the Levitical law in the book of Leviticus and see how God provided a way for widows to be redeemed and their families to be restored and for God to work. And so even for that long, God had been at work preparing for this moment to prove himself to this family and provide for all of the world through this one family. So Ruth and Naomi recognize they need a redeemer. So that's Naomi's instructions. Let's keep reading in Ruth chapter 3, where we see in verse 6, Ruth's initiative, right? She says in verse 5, I'll do everything you say. Remember that. Verse 6, she went down to the threshing floor and did everything her mother-in-law had charged her to do. After Boaz ate, drank, and was in good spirits, he went to lie down at the end of the pile of barley. And she came secretly. She uncovered his feet and lay down. At midnight, Boaz was startled, turned over, and there lying at his feet was a woman. So he asked, "Who are you?" "I'm Ruth, your servant," she replied. "Take me under your wing, for you are a family redeemer." Okay, let's pause there. Before we get on to the next scene, Ruth's initiative. What is happening here? It says that she'll do everything Naomi says, but it seems like she takes and does what Naomi says and then goes a step further. But first, let me just address something here that if you're wondering, there have been people who have said that something provocative is happening here, and you're kind of imagining they're they're outside, they're kind of camping, and they're next to the barley. What really is under the text and between the lines here? And I'll just say that the rest of the chapter paints the picture that both Ruth and Boaz operate with complete integrity. And I think that's the way we should read this. Now, there's certainly some cultural symbolism happening here, right? But we see things like she uncovers his feet. And by the way, guys, this is not like your biblical proof that it's always your wife who steals the covers, okay? That's not it. There's something else happening here. What it is here is an ancient DTR. You guys know what a DTR is? This little terminology was developed back when I was a teenager. Define the relationship. It's a define the relationship moment. Boaz and Ruth knew each other. Boaz, we saw in chapter 2, had been introduced to Ruth in the fields as she was gleaning barley. And he says, who is that woman? And why is she working here? And in fact, he invites her to the table. He gives her plenty of food to eat. He protects her along the way. He provides for her and Naomi. He knows who she is. He's heard the story that she came from Moab with Naomi and all this. But here in the darkness of night, he sees there's a woman. He just doesn't know which woman it is. And so he says, who are you? In verse 9. And the question revealed that Boaz wasn't quite ready to explain to Ruth what to do, like Naomi had suggested that he would be. He wasn't totally sure who Ruth was. He's still trying to figure things out. So Ruth calls an audible. She takes some initiative. She goes one step further than Naomi's instruction, and she turns the question around on Boaz. This is interesting in verse 9. She says, I am Ruth, your servant. But then she tells him who he is. You are a family redeemer, right? It's like she's saying the more important question, it's not who I am. The question is, Boaz, do you recognize who you are? Boaz, do you recognize the opportunity that you have to provide for my family, to meet a need, to show favor and grace and kindness and covenant love and loyalty? And she says, take me under your wing. You are a family redeemer. Now, other translations of this will say, because the Hebrew can be, you know, a little bit unclear, other translations will say, spread the edge of your garment over me. Maybe you're seeing that in the Bible that you have in front of you. This is Ruth's invitation as she's uncovered his feet. Now she's saying, spread the edge of your garment over me. This is covenant language, partnership language. This is marriage language. It would be later used by God through the prophet Ezekiel, as Ezekiel is receiving prophecy from God about who the Israelite people are to him. And he's saying, I am ready to spread my garment over them. I'm ready, even though they have rebelled against me, I'm ready to bring them under my wing, so to speak, to include them, to protect them, and to provide for them. Ruth is making it clear here that she would like to marry Boaz. Now, we're not sure why Boaz hasn't taken this initiative yet. I mean, he knows, right? He knows Ruth's story. He knows the opportunity. He knows he's related to Elimelech, Naomi's lost husband. We're not sure why he hasn't taken the initiative yet. It could simply be that, yes, guys, we all know that we can be a bit oblivious at times. We can miss the clues, miss the cues, right? Sometimes we're a bit unaware. And the women are nodding their heads a little bit. I see a few head nods. I was serving in a college ministry several years ago where our college pastor said to the young women in the room, essentially this, like, hey, you guys may be waiting for the guy to take the lead. You may be wanting the man that you are interested in to be a leader and to come and like ask you on a date. But he's like, can I just give you a hint? Like, they may not be totally aware that you're into them, and you may feel like you've dropped some clues along the way, but they're probably not quite there yet. And so he gave them a tip. Here was the tip. He said, you should go to these boys, and you should say something like this. Don't take the leadership from them, because yes, they should be the leader. But you women could, young women could go to these young men and say something like this. Hey, if you were to ask me to coffee, I would say yes. And then just walk away. And I know my friends Todd and Amanda are married because of this situation. She walked up to him that day, and they've been married for nearly 15 years now. It's really a cool thing. But here, what we find, we don't really know why Boaz is not taking the initiative, but we can see that, you know, Ruth, you know, she's true to form, taking initiative. This is what she does. We saw it in chapter 1 when she says, I don't care what Orpah's doing, going back to her parents and finding a husband in Moab, but I'm going to stay with Ruth. I'm going to stay with Naomi, excuse me. Well, Ruth even then takes initiative to establish this covenant relationship with Naomi. Naomi's not asking for it. Ruth just says, this is who I am to you. Ruth in chapter 2 opens up with Ruth taking initiative to go out into the fields to glean barley. She's asking Naomi for permission. Initiative is just part of who Ruth is. And so when the opportunity presents itself and she goes, I don't know if this is going anywhere. I'm not sure if Boaz is totally ready to tell me what to do. I'm just going to sort of put myself out there and see what happens. And at least we know that much. And what that reveals about Ruth is even further, as we saw in the beginning of the chapter, that she's embraced her need for a redeemer. She's embraced her need for a redeemer. Did you see in verse 3 where Naomi tells Ruth to put on her best clothes? Now that can be translated several different ways. It actually could mean something literal like put on your nicest dress. Like get ready for the ball, right? It also could mean something as simple as like put on an extra cloak because you're going outside tonight and it's going to be cold, maybe a little breezy. And so be prepared. So it could be utilitarian or it could be, you know, sort of romantic, right? But either way, she's telling Ruth to put on her own garments, both of which could have been appropriate for the occasion. But it doesn't matter whether she was supposed to dress fancy or whether she was supposed to dress for the weather. The reality was Ruth's covering for herself would never be enough, which is why she takes that initiative to ask Boaz, the Redeemer, for a covering that she cannot generate on her own. She can't be her own redeemer. She needed redemption and she was embracing that reality. So here we are in verse 9, and she's taken this initiative with Boaz, and then the scene shifts from Ruth's action to Boaz's reaction. From Ruth's initiative to Boaz's intention. Verse 10, then he said, may the Lord bless you, my daughter. Let me just pause there to go, okay, now he's aware. He knows who Ruth is. Remember how he gave her a blessing in chapter 2 because of knowing the story about how she came with Naomi to Bethlehem in covenant loyalty? He says, may the Lord bless you, my daughter. You have shown more kindness now than before because you've not pursued younger men, whether rich or poor. Now don't be afraid, my daughter. I will do for you whatever you say, since all the people in my town know that you are a woman of noble character. You might remember in chapter 2 where he was identified as a man of noble character. Verse 12, yes, it is true that I am a family redeemer, but there is a redeemer closer than I am. Stay here tonight. And in the morning, if he wants to redeem you, that's good. Let him redeem you. But if he doesn't want to redeem you, as the Lord lives, I will. Now lie down until morning. So she lay down at his feet until morning, but got up while it was still dark. Boaz said, don't let it be known that a woman came to the threshing floor. And he told Ruth, bring the shawl you're wearing and hold it out. And when she held it out, he shoveled 6 measures of barley into her shawl, and she went into the town. Boaz's intention. This is the section of Act 3. Did you see what he calls out in Ruth? It was the same thing that was identified about him in chapter 2, the word kindness. And we talked about this last week, that this Hebrew word would have been so familiar to the Israelite people reading it. It's the word chesed, right? It's this word that means covenant loyalty. And it's as if I said to you, Blue and Belle, you would know exactly what I was talking about. Even though those two words mean something totally different, you and I would both be thinking ice cream, wouldn't we? Right? When they hear this word chesed, yes, they're talking about kindness in the normal sense, but it's pointing us to a greater reality. It's pointing us to the God of Israel and his kindness and love and grace toward his people. And he says it of Ruth in verse 10, this kindness that you've shown. What kind of kindness has she shown? What kindness was there before, and why is this one greater? Well, the kindness before probably refers to her act of kindness toward Naomi, her mother-in-law. When she had nothing to offer Ruth, Ruth stuck with her. And she made a covenant with her and went with her to Bethlehem. The kindness now is that Ruth chose the path of redemption. Ruth saw in her story several paths in front of her. The first path was go back to your mother in Moab. Go find a husband there. But she knew that wasn't really where she was going to find her best rest, her truest rest and home and contentment and satisfaction. Instead, she wanted to do things God's way. She was committed in covenant loyalty to Naomi and to God. And so when all these younger men that she had met in the field were actually prospects for marriage, Ruth didn't even give it a second look. And you know that she knew that she could have married anybody, but she chose the path of redemption. She chose to do things God's way. She chose to love Naomi selflessly. She chose to seek redemption for her family and for her lost husband. And this was all part of God's plan. And Boaz's response indicates his intention here. First, he offers a prayer of blessing. And then he sandwiches this prayer of blessing with a promise of redemption, with the meat in the middle being a significant plot twist. Did you catch it? There's another redeemer who's a closer relative. Oh my goodness, what are we going to do now? Well, the promise, the prayer of blessing and the promise of redemption kind of point us to what we could expect to happen. The promise is for Ruth to be redeemed. And then we see in verse 14 and 15, just like chapter 2, Boaz steps up again as a protector for Ruth and a provider for Ruth and for Naomi. So here we are. The story moves on. Chapter 3, verse 15. 16, excuse me. She went to her mother-in-law, Naomi, who asked her, "What happened, my daughter?" This is the report back. Ruth told her everything the man had done for her. And she said, "He gave me these 6 measures of barley because he said, 'Don't go back to your mother-in-law empty-handed.'" And Naomi said, "My daughter, wait until you find out how things go, for he won't rest until he resolves this today." So now we find Naomi's intuition. What does Naomi think about all this? How is Naomi going to respond to this plot twist? Naomi, having come from a place of emptiness, by the way, that we see even referenced here, as Boaz says to Ruth, don't go back to Naomi empty-handed. You may have remembered that in chapter 1, verse 21, that Naomi says this about herself, blaming God for it. "The Lord has brought me back empty." And here Boaz is through Ruth, being a tangible reminder that even if it is God who does the emptying, he also can be trusted to fill again. And this is the good news of the potential for redemption that Naomi is beginning to see, that not only is she a recipient, but she can also be a participant in God's covenant love for his people and God's plan for the whole world. And so she speaks these words of wisdom to Ruth from a place of trust. "Sit tight, Ruth. Sit tight. Ruth, you set out to find rest. And I know Boaz won't rest until it's provided for you." And then Act 3 ends. That's it. If this was a show on Netflix, I mean, you wouldn't hesitate. Like, you wouldn't turn the TV off at this point, right? You'd be like, "No, I'm still watching. And but by the way, skip intro. Like, show me what happens next." Well, we're going to get there. It's a total cliffhanger. What about this other redeemer? Where is Boaz? Where is he going? What's going to happen to Ruth and Naomi? Will they get together? Will Naomi and Ruth be redeemed? We don't know yet. And we will get there. By the way, the Sunday before Christmas, we're going to see how this all resolves. I invite you on December 22nd to be here to hear the end of the story. But even here in chapter 3, there's truth to be gleaned. Even with a cliffhanger. Even as Naomi says to Ruth, "Sit tight," there is something she's trying to communicate to Ruth, something she's trying to impart in this story that leads Ruth to hope. And so I just want to give you 2 things as we wrap up today. The first is this, that rest, true rest, can only be found in the Redeemer. It can only be found in the Redeemer. This is the point of this chapter, is to find Ruth a home, a true home. Not a less than substitute for true, but to find a place where she can find true contentment, true satisfaction, true security. And so she rejects all of the other opportunities that she might have had. Even the ones that Boaz thought, you know, shouldn't she have chosen a younger person? I mean, it doesn't even matter if they have money. Surely they have more to offer than me. But what Ruth realizes is that Boaz had the one thing no one else or nothing else could offer her, and that was redemption. And so she sought redemption. Where do we seek security? Where do we seek contentment? Where do we seek satisfaction other than the Redeemer? Man, I mean, there's so many things that we just go to them so quickly, right? We don't even realize what's happening in our hearts, but all of a sudden, money is so important to us that we have forgotten the Redeemer, that where true satisfaction and true contentment is found, and we are just going after the next dollar. Like, how can I make more money? How can I pay for my bills? How can I, and we are asking all these questions, trying to find contentment and satisfaction in money, that we just totally miss the fact that true satisfaction, true contentment can only be found in the Redeemer. How about relationships? Wow, I mean, a broken relationship sends us into a tailspin. And it, rightly so, because there is no relationship on earth that can replace the true contentment and satisfaction that can only be found in the Redeemer. I mean, like we said, even marriage. I mean, even the idea of being married wasn't redemption for Ruth. And if I could speak to single people in the room, like there's some people who will tell you that you don't have hope until you are married. But can I just tell you that that's not the point? The ideal of marriage is not what was bringing redemption to Ruth. It was the idea of being married to the Redeemer. And you can be single and you can be married to the Redeemer, right? She didn't want to be with anybody else if they didn't have that one thing. And that's the heart of a Christian. It's to say, the world is full of things that are offering me false hope, false security, false contentment. And I've seen the evidence of that. And the way I'm growing spiritually is to recognize that my hope cannot be placed in any of those things. It can't be placed in my bank accounts. It can't be placed in my retirement accounts. It can't be placed in even the home I'm living in. It can't be placed in the relationships I have or want. It can't be placed in the hard work that I do every day to build a career. None of that offers true satisfaction. And I think at times you've probably seen glimpses of that as those things have hurt you. As those things have come up short, the invitation of Ruth chapter 3 is to say, rest, home, wholeness, contentment can only be found in the Redeemer. And Ruth was at this point where she had nothing. A foreigner, a widow, she was poor and she was in pain. Yet God did not leave her without hope. In fact, Jesus would later say in the Sermon on the Mount that those like Ruth are actually in the position of greatest hope and the position of greatest blessing. Do you remember what the Beatitudes say? Matthew chapter 5, verse 1 and 2. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for the kingdom of heaven is theirs. Blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. Blessed are those who have no more cards in their hand to play. When we're at the worst point in our lives, in our minds, is where God sees us in the best place to find redemption and hope and contentment and satisfaction through the Redeemer. So we must become like Ruth in order to enjoy the blessings of redemption. And if we are courageous enough to venture deeply into this kind of faith, then we're going to need the encouragement of Naomi too, the encouragement to sit tight because redemption is coming and he won't rest until it happens. And so the second point of application I want to leave you with is that you can trust the Redeemer to fulfill his promise. You can trust the Redeemer to fulfill his promise. Naomi says, sit tight until you find out what happens. Now, what that does not mean is that we do nothing. and just wait until fate or fortune happens and just be okay with whatever. What it does mean is to actively live expecting God's hand to be at work on our behalf and for him to bring about his purposes regardless of our circumstances. That we live for him and for his glory. And that whatever comes, whether it's pain or heartache or pleasure or happiness, that we give him glory and attribute it to him and do not take it for ourselves. We see that he is at work for our redemption. He is bringing about his desired result in the world. And that's where we see the whole trajectory of the book of Ruth going from emptiness and famine to fullness and provision in the Redeemer, who is not named in Ruth, but is named in the book of Matthew in the New Testament in chapter 1 in a genealogy. A genealogy that points and ends in Jesus Christ, the Son of God. Did you know that Ruth is one of only four women named in that genealogy in Matthew chapter 1? That Jesus is a descendant of Ruth and Boaz, who beget Obed, and so on. All coming from the line of David that the Bible promises. Jesus is the Redeemer. What about this other Redeemer? What about the plot twist? Can I just say that, which you already know, that life is full of plot twists. Life is full of good things and bad things that happen that are outside of our control, things that happen that are outside of our plans. When we've got all the ducks in a row and we think X should be the result of A plus B plus C plus D plus E, etc., and then Z happens and we go, all these things are happening to us, whether it's good or bad, and it's regardless of your commitment to God, it's regardless of your faith, it's regardless of how much time you spent praying or reading your Bible. Life just happens, and sometimes it's really good and sometimes it's really bad, but the one truth is that there will always be twists and turns that we do not expect. When those happen, take heed the words of Naomi to wait on the Redeemer. Because he is at work. This is something that Naomi had learned by experience. Because in chapter 1, she said, God is absent. God is ambivalent. God is against me. God is afflicting me. In chapter 2, she saw evidence that maybe that wasn't true. Maybe God was actually working. Maybe God was real. Maybe even in her pain, that God was somehow using horrible circumstances to bring about an incredible result that she could never have imagined on her own. And now in chapter 3, she's passing that experience on to Ruth. Sit tight, Ruth. I know that this was a plot twist. I know this wasn't what we planned on. But he won't rest until it's provided. Ultimately, you will be brought rest and redemption. And that is the encouragement, that whatever your plot twist is, God is not resting until redemption is brought in completion. But he's already given us a really good picture of redemption and the path for redemption through the person of redemption, who we have seen from Matthew chapter 1 is Jesus Christ, the Son of God. Ruth had to go to Boaz and spell it out. But God did not wait for us to take initiative. Instead, when we were at our worst, he came to us. Romans chapter 5, I've said this before recently, says that while we were enemies of God, Christ died for us. The story of Ruth is the story of Christmas. Jesus is the better Boaz, who did not need us to come to him, but came to us out of extreme love, a love that we have never experienced anything like it before, to give himself for you and for me. Not because we're church people, not because we're good people, because we're like Ruth. We're foreigners. Our sin had estranged us from God. Our sin had put us at odds with God. Our sin had made us poor and widowed with God. Yet he made it possible for us to be united with him again and to grant us all things with him through Jesus, our Redeemer. This is what Ruth 3 points us to. It's a cliffhanger for sure. We're going to see what happens in a couple weeks. But this we know, Jesus came for you to invite you into a restored relationship with God, to forgive you of sin, and to redeem your life and help you recover and pursue his design for your life. And that's good news. Would you pray with me? God, we are so grateful that you sent Boaz for Ruth, but even more that you sent Jesus for us. Wow, what a story. God, would you increase our faith? Would you help us believe that redemption is possible? And when our lives twist and turn, would you remind us that we can be grounded in you? Because you are constant, you are true, you are good. You are grace, you're love, you're for us. So turn us to you in faith, God. We pray in Jesus' name. Amen.